This studio is wonderful.
Listen, I don't really have to talk a lot. I'm just here to be your sidekick.
Sure.
You're the one who tells the story.
Sure. How cool is that? I love it.
Look at you.
That's so cool. Hey, look at that. Look at that. That's awesome, John.
That's great, yeah.
By the way, the studio is fantastic. Brand new?
Yeah.
It's awesome. It really is.
I came from corporate.
Okay.
Which probably what got me sick.
Yep.
But, but I came from corporate and like, just the fact of putting energy out instead of like in corporate, you're like taking energy in and trying to manipulate it and turn it into money.
Yeah.
Just the idea of, I mean, and I'm going to ask you guys about this in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
The idea of making something and putting it out.
Yeah.
It just reinvigorated me so much. I'm like, okay, now I got to do this for my life.
Absolutely.
And well, yeah, because there's really nobody doing that. I mean,
wait, put the headphones on. We're doing the show. This is why I don't talk to people before the show, because we wind up doing the show.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Of course.
Man. All right.
Thank you. Right here?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
And those just help you hear. Yeah. You don't have to wear them, but it just helps you hear.
Sure.
You're doing, and we're rolling, so.
Yeah, great.
But I just,
my horrible voice?
No, you don't have a horrible voice at all.
Well, I told you, you're doing most of the talking.
Yeah.
Hold on one second. Let me just play this in, because we.
Sure.
I'm like, you're doing most of it, I said.
We.
I'm just for moral support.
Yeah, right.
You're good moral support, though. All right, hold on.
Because you see me all over the place.
That's good, though. All right, hold on. Let me play this in here. I don't want to play in front of producers. No, I'm nervous. Hold on.
Come on.
Hey, this is John. This is Home From Here. There's probably going to be about a minute before the song that you're going to hear in the show, because we started doing the show before the show. Because these guys are fun. And I will also post a picture, the only picture you'll ever see, of me in a black t-shirt. I'm John, this is Home From Here. Let me just get that. All right, I am... can you guys introduce yourselves? Because I know some resume, I don't know a ton of resume.
So I am Karen Catalano. I own a hair salon, Loxette Rock Hair Design.
And one of the nicest people on the planet, by the way.
Thank you so much. And I had the honor of meeting Mr. John Krupa here, who kind of pulled me into this show. And I'm very excited to say I've been with it for about 2 years now.
What's this? First, jump on that mic a little bit harder.
Sure.
Or you can pull it to you, whatever you want to do. And what's the show?
Choices of Rock Opera.
Okay, great. And John, you are...
So I'm John Krupa, and I'm the writer, producer, director, and I even have a small part in the show. So I'm honored to be here with Karen Catalano, one of our producers as well. And John, thank you so much for having us on.
No, man.
I really
appreciate it. Thank you for coming. Okay. Gazillion questions. Who wants to go first? You guys can pick.
Yeah, whatever you want.
All right, John first? All right.
Sure, John. Sure.
How long does it take? So I'm trying to write a folk opera.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare. How long did it take you to write this thing?
It was more fluid than I imagined. Actually, I started this right before COVID. And actually, COVID, which I don't need to tell anyone, was just devastating to the country, the world, and stuff like that. Actually had a couple of, regrettably, a couple of good things. And one of the things was it gave me time to be more creative and be more productive and to contribute more to the writing of this. So I think it sped the process along. So I think normally this would have taken me maybe 3-4 years, but because of consolidating a lot of my energies into this during the COVID time, I got this this show done in 2 years. But also, John, I would go so far as to say it's not totally done.
Okay,
we're constantly making changes to improve the show. We're still currently in the workshopping stage. We've had 3 runs of the show thus far.
Successful runs, though.
Successful runs. Yep, okay. All sold out, and we've had some great responses. And then we've had these focus groups where people said, you know what, I think maybe you should try this, and we've enjoyed that process as well. As much as being on stage, we enjoy the process of creating. So to answer your question, sorry to be so roundabout, but I think this show took me about 3 years to write, something like that. Yeah.
What's your process? Do you have like a dedicated time during the day that you do it, or is it just when inspiration hits, or are you an iPhone guy? What do you do?
So for me, it's when inspiration hits, and I downloaded GarageBand onto my iPhone, and I've actually been driving on these long distance trips, and next thing you know, I have an idea coming to me. So I will actually use GarageBand on my iPhone as a notepad for writing. So it's inspiration. Hit quite often, so I think I was working on this.
But that only worked. That's only for the music, though, right? Like, what about the lyrics? How do you do that?
So my process, I think everyone's process is very different, and my process is very unorthodox in that sometimes I'll have the lyric content or at least the concept first, and then I'll change it as I add music to it. But as that, this is a rock opera. That makes it a little, I think, John, a little bit more, a whole different process. The process here is that every single word has a note associated with it, or several. So it's very difficult with no dialogue to actually have, a sung dialogue. When I want to try and get the storyline across, I have to think of it in terms of multi levels, multi-planes, where there's music and there's a melody line and there's the storyline all tied into one. So sometimes the lyrics will come first, sometimes the music will come first, but they all seem to come simultaneous.
How do you do exposition in an opera period? Because I actually used to work for New York City Opera.
Ah, wonderful.
And it wasn't. And so I got to see like a gazillion operas.
Yeah.
And the exposition was all done in the scenery, mm-hmm. was all done in
– In everything.
Costume, right. Okay, yeah. But in the actual music, there was storytelling, but there wasn't exposition. If you're listening, you don't know what exposition is. Exposition is I'm doing an interview with two great people. I'm in a new studio. I want people to know how ramped I am, but I can't say I'm doing an interview with two cool people in a new studio and I'm ramped. I have to somehow figure out how to communicate that to you without saying it.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
In an opera, it's hard to – you can't write, I am sad.
Right.
Right? Nobody wants to hear that. How did you handle that?
How do you develop characters?
How did you
develop the plot line and subplots? So great question, John. So actually, I started with an overall idea. And the overall idea is the story is actually semi-autobiographical. And then I actually
– Okay, let's go there.
Sure, of course. But then I made a conscious decision, okay, how would I take what's pre-existing, what's factual, and then what would I add to it to make the storyline more interesting
right.
and stuff. So I started with that general framework.
Okay.
But then I'm sorry to even screw up myself by saying this. I actually started this show in the middle. I didn't start in the beginning. I didn't start at the end and work backwards. I started in the middle, and I said, "Okay, this is the part before the climax. We're leading up to the climax and stuff like that. So let me get the biggest stuff out of the way first.
Okay,
and that's what I did. And then after the climax with the denouement and all these theatrical expressions and stuff like that.
Right.
So and I'm happy to go through all that with you, but. It just came natural to me to say, okay, here is the pivotal moment in the show. Let me write that first.
Right.
And then from there, I said, okay, now what leads up to that?
There's a danger doing that, though.
Yeah, there is.
Because you can when you write the biggest stuff first, you can kind of lose interest in the other stuff. Because the itch is scratched. I mean, it's that way in like songwriting, even just – plain songwriting. If you hit on a great chorus, I mean, I don't have any examples personally to share with you.
Oh, come on.
You hit upon a chorus that you like, and you're like, oh God, that feels good.
Yeah.
And then you're like, now I got to write verses, but I kind of just want to keep playing the chorus until I'm tired of it, right?
Right.
So
exactly.
So there's a real element of discipline in getting that.
Absolutely.
Getting that done.
Absolutely. So I think that from my experience in the business world. I actually studied
You have too cool a hair to have ever been in the business
yeah,
world.
No, yeah,
oh, is that your work?
That is my work.
Well done.
Yeah, exactly. But in that world, I actually listened, of all things, to a podcast that was entitled Why. And life is about why, right? And so why are you doing this? Why would you do this? So to answer your question, John, so after writing this pivotal stuff, I started asking the question, why? Why did they get to this moment?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why did this moment need to happen?
Right.
You know what? And so then I started putting the puzzle pieces together for that why, without giving plot pieces away. Choices, as the name might imply, would be like the universal story of the choices that we make in our lives on a
cool.
daily basis. Right. That's what that would be a great interpretation, but choices. For me, is more than that. It's actually about the consequences of those choices. And if, for example, in your life, John, or in Karen's life, if you make a huge choice and then it doesn't work out,
I have no examples of that either.
Yeah, I know exactly. Tell me about it. Exactly, we all do. That's the universality of this.
Right.
But if they don't work out, here's a question for you. Legit, does that make it a bad choice?
No.
Right.
No,
that's my opinion too.
It might make it a more valuable choice.
I agree with that so majorly.
Yeah.
And that's the point we're trying to get across. That is the moral center of choices. It's that he makes this monumental choice, this life choice, and it doesn't work out the way he seems. So he regrets it.
Right.
You know? And I think that people inherently would do that, say, oh, I made a wrong choice. Let me go back. First of all, there are no do-overs. We know this. But second of all, that choice wasn't a bad choice because in the moment that he made that choice, it was the right choice.
Yeah.
So you can't second guess that later on because it didn't work out the way you felt it would.
You Buddhist?
I am not, but I study Buddhism.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So it your premise is Buddhist.
Yeah.
That if you can teach yourself to observe your choices.
Yep.
Rather than feel them.
Yep.
You will be able to eliminate regret, right?
Exactly. That's right.
That's a big tool.
It is.
Yeah,
it is very important. And speaking of that, by the way, I'm not Buddhist, but I am in the midst of painting a picture of Buddha that I saw in China right outside of Ningbo.
So, oh, wow,
so it
cool.
Is it's kind of funny. So no, great tie-in, John. Great tie-in.
They happen natural. It's not me.
Yeah.
You play guitar?
Actually, so strangely enough, my background is as a bassist. I played bass with a number of notable musicians from Meat Loaf to Paula Cole to a number of places. When I auditioned for the New Monkees that MTV was putting on years ago, they stood us in line and asked a question, name and what instrument do you play? And they came to me and they said, name? I said, John Krupa. And the guy goes, oh, any relation to Gene? I said, well, yeah, actually I am. But that's
are you?
Yes, I am. And
oh,
that's
cool.
A whole different story. And they said, what instrument do you play? And John, I'll just answer to you like I answered to them. I said, what do you want me to play?
Nice.
So I can play. I studied a piano when I was 4 years old to the time I was 9 years old. I studied trumpet. I was a pretty good trumpet player back in the day. I switched to bass guitar, which is, I guess, today my main instrument. But I play guitar. I play drums. I play anything. Yeah.
Why bass?
You know, there's a funny story in there.
Go.
And I'm sorry to waste all your listeners' time. I hope that they find this as entertaining as I do because it's a funny story. I played bass because of and I got into bass because of a story related to a battle of the bands in my high school.
Okay.
So I had just started playing bass in my high school because the band I was in needed a bass player. So at this battle of bands in this tiny high school I went to in Westchester.
Where'd you go?
I went to Rye High School.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So I was there. And I graduated with like 230 people. It was a small school at the time. And this battle of the bands, you know, there were a number of bands. And I actually played bass in every one of the bands in the bow of the bands. And then I was coming off stage having
If only he had some talent.
I came in first, second, and third place in the bow of the bands. But as I was coming off the stage, and this is the band that won first place, some guy came up to me and he goes, "Hey, we're on next. Do you want to play bass with us?" And I literally said, "What kind of stuff are you doing?" And they said, "Oh, we're a Grateful Dead tribute band." And I said, "Well, I don't know any Grateful Dead." And they said, "Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just, you know, we'll give you
the chords." With Grateful Dead, you kind of don't have to.
You don't have to. It's a jam band stuff. And so I literally went on stage with them, and they said, "Okay, this song is G to D." I'm like, "Okay, then what is it doing the chorus?" They're like, no, that's it.
Yep.
G to D. And I'm just like, okay. So for 20 minutes, I played G to D. You know? And they came
that's
in, and
hilarious.
They won. And they won the Battle of the Bands.
That's hilarious.
So the reason I'm a bass player
GDD.
Is because...
What else? No, that's pretty much the story.
Exactly. Bass players back in when I was in high school, bass players could find work very easily.
Yeah.
That's why I played bass, because there was always room for me somewhere.
Are you good at slapping a bass?
So I'm not a slapping and popping kind of bass player. My background is more blues.
It's so fun. I can't... For anybody who's good at bass... won't slap it.
Yeah.
I've had a
yeah.
couple bass players in here, and I'm always like, "Do you slap it?" And they're like, "Well, no, that's..." Yeah. And I'm like, "Yeah." So it's slapping...
So I love it, and I appreciate it, and I can respect the guys who are particularly good at it. It's just not the style where, first of all, I've been able to make money. And I also – this is a very strange thing, I guess, John, that you're learning is something about myself that I didn't even know, which is I actually enjoy as part of my life as laying in the background. And I think that slapping and popping brings
bass
up to the front.
Yep.
And I like laying in the background.
Yeah.
Most of my life is front of stage. And so when I'm playing with bands, I like just gelling with the band. I like just being a part of the background, of the backbeat, the what makes up the heart of the band.
Did you sing in a choir as a kid?
I did.
That's where you learn that.
Yeah, right.
Because when you sing in a choir, you learn to participate rather than perform.
That's right.
If you're listening to the show and you're seven, first off, go to fucking school.
Yeah, right.
I find that to be true, right? If you get your roots in a choir,
agreed.
Which is why so many great vocalists are start out in choirs, because
agreed.
you learn to participate in a bigger, and you learn to participate in a song rather than be the song.
Yeah.
And that makes you a way better
That's awesome, John.
Musician.
I agree with you totally.
Yeah.
I agree with you totally.
And it's funny because
get on that mic.
Oh. It's really funny because that's what I am to him. I'm his background. So I stand in the background with him too, and I take care of a lot of the business and I do a lot of stuff with him. So I think our relationship grew right there, because when you asked him about when he gets his ideas, well, he'll tell you he calls me about 10:30 at night.
That's true.
With a great idea. And I'm like, you know, I'm trying to go to bed, right?
Karen is diminishing her role. She's by no means background.
All right. So you're a hairstylist, right?
Yes, I am.
You're a hairstylist who hates the microphone. Can you bend
it? I do hate
it. Can you
microphone.
Bend that to you? Just pull it right out to you. Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So what's the – I know a lot of hairstylists. None of them produce rock operas.
So I opened Lockstep Rock Hair Design in 1991.
Okay. Where is that?
It is in Wappinger Falls, New York.
What's the number?
1552 Route 9 in Wappingers.
And did you have a website?
Yes.
It's Pitch it.
www.lockstetrock.com.
Locks That Rock.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
So
nice.
I started by cutting everybody's hair that was in a band.
You cut John's hair?
I did.
Yes.
All right. I know this is a radio show, but the guy has kick-ass hair. Okay, go ahead.
And so, you know, John and I met. He became a client, and he said, "Oh, I'm working on a rock opera." And I'm like, "Oh, that sounds kind of cool." You know, we grew up realizing we were in the same clubs in New York, because my best friend ran the famous Cat Club. And I said, "Oh, my God, you and I are probably standing next to each other drinking with each other back then." You know,
that's true.
And I got involved in bands and this and that and blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, "Well, would you like to work on the rock opera?" I'm like, "What?" You know, so I went in doing hair, and from there, I think
expanded
I won like five departments now.
Costuming, stylist.
Yeah, we're
everything.
Doing costumes. I take care of some PR work for him. I take care of all the merch when you walk into the theater, which looks like a rock concert as you walk in with the shirts and, you know, the guitar picks and the whole nine yards. And really, I've learned a great journey through this man because I would have never done anything like this.
So what's the journey? What did you learn?
So, you know, actually, I've never worked in theater. So going from hair to, you know, just learning how to be on a stage, you know, because I'm very, as you can see, I'm not one for this. I'm like him. I like to be in the background.
It does take you a few minutes to get a mic in front of your face, lady.
Yeah, and I've managed quite a few bands. I managed my own band for 20 years.
You have a band?
I was actually their manager for 20 years. And they don't play any longer, but they play in different projects.
Right.
So, but I would never walk out on a stage. He'll tell you it takes a lot for me just to come out and take a bow. He literally has to coax me out because I'm
good.
No. But I've just learned, you know, front end, back of house, you know, working with actors. You know, I never really worked with actors like that. Organizing costumes and hair and who's got makeup on. And I've learned to do it in a very fast paced setting.
Right.
You know, which was quite interesting.
So you're interesting because you're a female entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I'm what?
Yeah. You're a female entrepreneur.
Yes.
Yeah. That's also an artist. That's a weird combo.
Yeah.
Usually you're bent towards the arts and or business.
Yeah, or one or the other.
Right, one or the other. And you can do both.
So
you manage bands? Because I'm looking for representation.
So, you know, I live through a separation. My motto in business has always been separate business and personal. So my personal life has never come into any business form of life. So I run the salon. And even back in the day, I would leave the salon after an 11-hour day, run to a bar, throw my biker jacket, and take the money at the door.
Yeah, that's right.
And organize my band. You know, I've done it for so many years, and I know how to do it.
Right.
You know.
What do you think of the music industry now? Here's my bitch
don't
about the music.
Don't ask me that.
I'll tell you my bitch about the music industry. How good you are has very little to do with how successful you are.
Yep.
And it makes me crazy. It's the least – it's the farthest away from a meritocracy of any industry.
Absolutely.
Even like you know, the next step you could maybe argue would be acting because, you know, you get cast based on how you look. Yeah. But you still have to be able to, you know, you still have to actually be in music.
Yeah.
To be successful, it's almost gotten so bad that in music, to be successful, you don't have to be musical.
Right. Because they can make you musical.
They can make you musical.
Yeah, they make
with
you musical.
Auto-tune. With,
totally.
I mean, they can make you musical.
Yeah.
But I agree with this in that there's no – it's not a meritocracy at all. In business, cream rises to the top. You know,
yeah.
You do well. You get promoted. You go up.
It's a meritocracy.
But in music, literally, you can be – you know, and I don't mean anything negative about this, but you can be standing on a street corner and the right person walks by at the right time and says – you have any experience? No. Oh, but I love the tonality of your voice. I'm going to sign you and we're going to make something of you. And there's no 30 years of experience. There's no – so I agree with you, John. It's just all chance.
It's all – right. It's all
chance. It's completely changed from way back when, you know, it's – you know, there's no more demo tapes or – you know, or promo packages.
It's almost like you have to develop your own podcast to get people to hear your songs.
Hey, listen, social media.
Good play, John.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, social media is the whole thing. I mean, you know, if you have a presence out there, you know, go back to Queensryche. When Queensryche back then, they never even played out. But because they had such a large following, they signed them.
Yeah. Right.
They took a chance.
Right. Right.
Many years later.
You know, it's funny you're right because like I'm like even – like we've talked about you guys long enough. Let's talk about me.
We'll interview you, John. We'll interview you.
No, you don't want that.
Yeah.
No, but it's so funny because like I tried to play out for forever.
Yeah.
And I'm not like you. I'm like one guy and a guitar. Like you, I can't carry a room at
night. I saw the pictures of you at Paula's.
Oh, well, that was two guys and two guitars.
Oh, that was two guys, yeah.
But no, like I can't carry a room at 10 o'clock at night. I will put you to sleep. I can play brunch. I'm a James Taylor knockoff. I can play brunch.
Yeah, nice.
But still, you know, I see guys with one guitar playing out, and I was trying to play out for forever. Yeah. And then I get the show, and then all of a sudden – that, you know, now I get asked, and it has nothing to do with how good you are. Like I've probably been better than I am right now, but yeah. and it just makes you nuts because you're like, yeah. Man, all that work. Who's the greatest living guitar player?
Greatest living guitar player, because greatest.
And don't feel like you have to flatter. Go ahead.
It is you, John. Actually, I would say greatest deceased guitar player was Eddie Van Halen, because I don't think people appreciate the fact that there are some people who are the living embodiment of something supernatural or superhuman,
yeah,
permeating through their being.
Yeah.
And a couple hundred years ago, you had, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, who was that person,
yeah,
who just music just came natural to him. I don't know if there's the stories of Mozart is that he never edited any manuscripts. As he's writing, it just came from his head, and he never made any edits.
Wow!
So as he's writing something for,
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah. He's writing, you know, for an entire orchestra, and he never edited. So there was something very superhuman about him.
Yeah, man.
Eddie Van Halen's the same thing. I actually had a criticism from a producer I worked with back when I was in the recording industry. I worked for a record label, and he was telling me how much he hated Eddie Van Halen because Eddie Van Halen never paid attention to what he was doing and was smiling all the time like an idiot. This was his words, not mine.
Who says that about Eddie Van Halen?
And so I said,
I call that flow. That's
and that's what I did too. And okay. I said, I'm going to argue with you on this one. The fact that he's not paying any attention and smiling all the time means that the music is coming right through right. him from a source that we can't understand.
Right.
I said, and that's what makes him so freaking special. You know, that's why we who have lived in this time and age of Eddie Van Halen really need to appreciate what we've seen. It's like living in a time and age of like a Van Gogh. It's a time and age of a Rembrandt. It's a time right. and age someone who was so far beyond his peers, you know, that there had to be something magical
it's
mythical.
Funny you say that, because I'm not a Van Halen fan,
right.
but when you watch him play,
just seem natural.
It's almost like he's not playing an instrument.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost like, okay, my hands are doing this, but I'm having a good time. Now my hands are off doing this.
Exactly.
And I'm not even on the – you're right. It's like he's not even on the planet. He's just like, my hands are doing this. This is effortless.
Yep.
And blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like when you sit and your foot jiggles. It's like, I'm paying attention to you, but by the way, I'm orchestrating here.
And John, if I could tell you a quick story I heard about Eddie Van Halen, I think that exemplifies what I'm saying. So he came up with this interesting riff on a song. I think it was Mean Streets, but I apologize. I don't remember off the top of my head. And someone went up to him and goes, wow, oh my God, how did you do that? And Eddie Van Halen said back to him, I don't know. It just happened.
Yeah.
Now, to me, that is something special.
I have a great Eddie Van Halen story.
Okay.
So Eddie Van Halen does that in Beat It, right?
Yeah.
Plays the riff and Beat It.
Yep.
So Michael Jackson, so he records it. It's legendary, blah, blah, blah. Michael Jackson goes on tour, and he has a female, I can't remember her name, but she's a female guitar player, and she studies the riff note for note, because you got to duplicate that. So Michael Jackson and Eddie Van Halen happen to be in the same town at the same time. So Michael Jackson goes to his guitar player and says, hey, listen, do you mind if Eddie, like what's she going to do? She's like, of course, let me do it.
Yeah.
So they reach out to Eddie Van Halen, and he's like, yeah. So he shows up the day of, and he's like, I need to meet with your guitar player. And they're like, why do you need to meet with a guitar player? Yeah. And he's like, he couldn't remember any of it.
Yeah.
Like he had, it was so un, so un.
Just happened.
It so just moment. Happened that he couldn't remember it.
Yeah.
So she
moment.
Had to teach him his own riff.
Amazing.
Oh my God, how funny is that?
Isn't that crazy?
That
amazing.
Is crazy.
Yeah. Do you, how is this going to make money choices?
Yeah,
we hope so.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, what's the plan? Tell me the plan.
So I'll tell you the plan. Yes. But John, I won't, can I go back to just something that Karen said?
Yeah, please.
And this does relate to your question, of course.
It doesn't matter if it does or doesn't.
No, it very much does. So Karen once again was undervaluing her contribution to the show.
Okay.
I just want to stress something. This show, more so than I think any show that's on the on the Broadway path or whatever you want to call it and stuff like that.
And you guys are.
Thank you. Yeah, we are. But this show is a community effort. You know, not that I studied Hillary Clinton's book. You know, it takes a community.
Right.
But this show takes a community.
Absolutely.
And without Karen's contribution or Mike Rosenman's contribution as our musical director or Dawn Levy's contribution as a producer or the list goes on and on.
Oh,
without
absolutely.
Without all these people's contributions, we have nothing. I feel that I gave just a framework to the show.
Okay.
And it was these glorious efforts by our actors, musicians, tech people, producers. It's that made this the show that it is today. And it's still evolving. But without Karen's contribution, without the contribution of these people in the show, it wouldn't be at the place it is today. And that leads me to, is it going to make money? Yes, it is, because we've put in the time and the effort to make this the best show it can be. The audiences have very well received the show. We are currently on the trajectory to not only do the whole Broadway thing. First, we're going to do some theaters around the country, but we're on that trajectory. We're also taking the show overseas. We're going to Europe. And we're working those details. And without contracts being signed, I don't want to say anything more. But also, we're on a new trajectory as well that actually takes the show in a different place than we ever imagined. Let's just call it into different media.
Choices of the movie. I said it. You didn't.
You said it.
Right. I said it. You didn't.
You said it. That's fantastic. I can't.
Well, first off, congratulations, man. That's really awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
I
comes from a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of. It's from the ground up. It's been so many different people working on it, and and the great thing about John is in these conversations you can say, "Hey, I have this idea," and he'll say, "Well, what do you think?" Or can I change this costume? Yeah, run for it, because I'm always looking for the 80s stuff,
Yep.
And he always listens to everyone's ideas. And then what I like about it is that we collaborate and we make it work.
Right.
So those changes that, keep evolving just makes it even better and takes it to another level.
So you have business background too?
I do. I own a business.
What's your business?
I own a business in the music industry.
Okay.
I own a business where we are the USA counterparts to a couple of foreign pro audio manufacturers.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay.
And in the past, on your desk is that Fostex 6301, that little speaker there.
Well done.
I used to be the guy who brought those in.
Okay.
So I actually so right now I work with a loudspeaker manufacturer, a microphone manufacturer, a console manufacturer, and it's funny that my two worlds do intertwine at times, but it was not intentional.
Right.
I wanted to keep them separate, but so I do. I own a business that's also in Wappingers Falls. Now.
Oh, cool.
And
you want to plug it?
No, it's okay. We're very much wholesale only.
Got it. Okay.
So for you, John.
All right. Cool. I'll let you out. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
We don't do retail.
What is it? So you both have corporate
life,
and you both have creative life.
Yeah.
And you're just talking about how Choices is collaboration. Yeah. What is it about the arts that facilitates collaboration, where in commerce it's a collaboration fire extinguisher?
Collaboration fire extinguisher. I like that. Great job.
But it's true. When you're working together in the arts, you are, my experience, I don't know, I shouldn't impose this on you, but when you're working together in the arts, everybody has a role. You collaborate, you support each other's role. And when you're working in business, there's always that sense that I could do what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Do
mm-hmm.
I need
mm-hmm.
you? Mm-hmm. My goal is to get what you have away from you and put it on my side of the board. What is it about the arts that's not that? Because I have a theory.
Okay. Well, I'd love to hear your theory. I'd love to hear Karen's theory. I'll just jump in first,
yeah, man.
Because I actually think that there's more similarities to my business life and my artistic life than you would think. Because
okay,
in
cool.
both aspects, my main purpose, my main goal in life is to produce.
Okay.
Okay. And is to make something where there was nothing before.
Right.
Okay. And it was to achieve something. You know, so for me, art is very much about the journey. Don't get me wrong. It is very much about the process of creating. But I hate to belittle the process by saying it is results driven. So for me.
If you're good at it, it's results driven.
If you're good at it.
Yeah.
And so whether
could not agree more.
Whether it's in business or in art, and again, I love the journey, but it's all about taking something that didn't exist before and then making something that exists and maybe exists beyond you. I mean, I expect choices to live on after I'm gone. I expect my business to live on after I'm gone. So it's my goal to be a real contributing member of society. And it's my goal with art to give the world something that it doesn't already have.
I like him.
Well done, Karen.
Well done.
Be great together.
Well done.
But that's just me. That's my opinion. That's what I want to do.
Right. So, Karen?
It's pretty much the same as him. Like, I want Locks That Rock to – I've always said I – 33 years in business. Is this going to go on if I retire?
Right.
So developing my staff and, hoping it will live on is what my goal would be, obviously,
right.
For Locks That Rock Hair Design. And as far as the show is concerned, on the art side, for me, I get to be a little more creative in there with him. I mean, I'm very creative behind the chair, but again, I step away and then I go to another
right.
project. Or I step away and, as you know, I work with Natasha B a
yes.
little bit. So I'm working with Natasha and, Sean and there. I've always departmentalized.
You got to tell them about the new studio, by the way.
My world.
Right.
And people are like, well, how do you do that? And I'm actually teaching. I've had people come to colleges and ask me to teach small business in an economical way because I've survived 33 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm very blessed with my life as how it's become.
Right.
You know what I mean? But choices is going to go on because, I feel it. You feel it.
Yeah. Right.
That's it. That's our motto.
We have to feel it,
So I'm listening to have you read Rick Rubin's book?
I have not.
On creativity?
I have not. It's worth reading. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So he talks about creativity and he says here's his thesis. Mm-hmm. We are here to create, like what you were talking about, to make something that wasn't there before.
He stole it from me.
Well, there may be a suit there.
Right?
And he talks about how there's basically creativity is a channel. Mm-hmm. And the goal of the artist isn't to actually create something, it's just to tune into that channel.
Right.
And if you tune into that channel, like you were talking about with Van Halen and Mozart, it'll just come through you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with that. My question is then to you guys, what role does discipline play though? Because you can have. I know people that have a lot of good thoughts.
Yeah.
That never become a thing. You have made a thing, Karen. You have made a thing, John.
Yeah.
What? So to me, that's tuned into the channel, whatever the channel is. But then there's another element in order to manifest it. What's the other element?
Well, first of all, I do agree with there's a widely held belief that you need 1,000 hours on anything to be an expert on.
10,000 hours.
10,000 hours. I try to speed things up.
This is only episode 125, so I clearly suck.
Not at all. But I do subscribe to you need to put the hours in. I very much do. And that's part of it. I'll give you an example from my life. I actually wanted to be a better singer when I was in high school. And no one else was thinking this in high school, but I went and I got myself a vocal teacher. And I paid for vocal lessons. I had previously taken piano lessons, trumpet lessons, bass guitar lessons, electric guitar lessons. I had taken all these lessons, and I moved on.
Right.
And I felt that the one thing I was lacking was some kind of vocal lesson. So I found a vocal teacher, very good, and he taught me how to sing properly. And I was so excited to have that that basis. So then I joined a new band with this experience under my belt, and I started singing. And I started singing this opera. And they were playing some 1980s, you know, a little bit of The Cars, a little bit of Loverboy, these type of bands. And yep. I'm singing it like I'm in the Metropolitan Opera.
Fantastic.
You know? And they were like, you know, we can tell you know how to sing, but I don't think you're right for this band.
Right.
You know? And I'm just like, oh, okay. And they're like, you know, we'll try and find the next, you know, rock opera thing. But I'm just joking. But anyhow, so
little did you know you become the rock opera.
So it took me a while to understand that you need a basis, you need a framework to then work off of.
Right.
Meaning, I loved visiting. When I was in Barcelona recently, I went to the Picasso Museum and I saw his early works. I had no idea how accomplished a realistic artist he was. You know, long before Cubism, long before he studied all these other practices and became an impressionist and all. He was like in the traditional Rembrandt school of realism
cool.
and stuff, and it was amazing, and that to me said a lot about my background, because you have to have that basis to then decide what to throw away and what to keep to make it your own.
Right.
So with singing, I appreciate the fact I took opera and stuff like that. Then I threw it all the hell away.
Right.
You know? And I kept the breathing techniques in place because that's helped me. Here I am, you know, I'm 55 now, and I can still belt out Robert Plant like no one else because I have that background in opera, because I have that background in proper breathing technique and all that stuff. But I also knew what to throw out. And I threw out the timbre, and I added something from the voice so I can sing scratchy like a Brian
that's
Johnson
so
bassy
funny
D
you say
and
that.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so so there's a lot of work, to answer your question. There's a lot of work that goes into this, and it's not – none of this happens by chance. This all happens by the thousands and thousands of hours that we put into it. And my background entails studying constantly, you know, and studying things like last weekend I went to the Met in the city, and I just studied the artwork, and I'm not a painter, but I enjoy painting, and I literally got right up as close as I could to those paints to study the brush strokes, you know, because looking at it from a distance you couldn't tell.
Right.
So I think that my life is that.
Right.
I'm getting up close to study those brush strokes no matter what I do.
Right.
It's very important for me to understand everything I'm doing. There's a lot that Karen and I admittedly don't understand about the theater world, but it's fun for us to learn, and it's fun for us to get in there and work with people who can teach us and guide us and stuff like that. I don't profess to, and I know Karen said the same thing, we don't profess to know all these things, but we love learning. And
I walked into my first meeting with him, and I was this little thing sitting in the corner going, what am I doing here? Little did I know, 2 years later, I'd still be standing there.
Right.
He can't get rid of me.
No, she's here.
Nor should he.
Nor should he.
But same thing for you, though. Like, you're not a songwriter, but you create every day. What percentage of that is discipline?
So I had somebody tell me that I am a creature of habit, and I am. I am very disciplined. My business, you know, I stand behind the chair, but then it's payroll, it's this, you know. So my business is very departmentalized and taken care of. And then he'll tell you, I bagged about 300 pieces of swag so it looks pretty
nice
for the next show, you know.
Right.
And then I work on choices, and then from choices I go to Natasha, and then from Natasha. So I, you know, I'm very organized in my day of where it's going and what it's doing.
How do you keep track of your time? Google Calendar? No?
So, as John knows, I am a paper and pencil girl.
Okay.
I am, when I walk into a show, I have to have my clipboard. I have to know what's happening. I have to see it. I have to feel it. I have to know where I'm going. Business-wise, my accountant would crack up if she heard this. You know, I still hand her a book full of paper and pencil.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just been who I've been my whole time.
This is one of my fears about the arts going forward, because everybody's like, you know, AI music's we're gonna get dinged up and blah blah. I'm like, I don't think AI is the problem. I think the problem is your brain works in a very different way when you handwrite.
Yes.
Than when you type.
It's learned.
And
it's learned.
And if you aren't handwriting your music and your lyrics or your notes or whatever.
Absolutely.
You have a lesser, my opinion. If you're not handwriting, you have a lesser understanding.
Yep.
And you have a lesser connection. Yep.
Absolutely.
I don't think AI will ever replace the human soul, but if we stop handwriting, it might.
I agree with you, John.
Do you?
Yeah, I very much do.
I agree with that, but I also, you know, that's what I try to explain to my staff or working or, you know, I worked with Frank Pallett, may he rest in peace, with The Chance, and he would laugh because, you know, I'd have my writer and my notes and where went, you know, and he would just crack up at me. But at the end of the night, he'd say, can I have your notes back?
Yeah.
Can you give me the budget back?
They're,
you
know, funny till I need it. Now it's not so funny.
You know, and it's just always been the way. He walked in this morning. I have a whole list of stuff of, you know, swag that we've been dealing with and what's been sold and what's going where. And you know, so I think that people have lost that art of, you know, you just think you're going to remember. But in the end, this, you know, having it in front of you is so much better.
Yeah. And having done it with your hand is really different. When I write lyrics, I write them out by hand first. And then type, and it's just, and I've tried it the other way, and it's just, I mean, I'm not a great lyricist, but it there's a significant difference.
Absolutely.
But you have to look at, you know, our age and the way we were taught how to do things, and you know.
I know what you're saying, and like my daughter, but it's funny because my daughter's 16.
Mm-hmm.
And she can't learn anything unless she hands write it. Like,
but
she
that's
has,
awesome. True. My son is 30 and he's the same way.
Yeah.
I taught him that way.
Yeah. But I didn't teach her because, I mean, you know, she grew up, she was texting me when she was six.
Yeah.
But she still needs to.
Absolutely.
Needs to hand write stuff in order to understand it. Yeah.
Say my daughter too.
Oh, yeah.
Same exact thing. She's in nursing school now. She's not 19. And everything that she studies is all handwritten.
Yeah.
Handwritten.
Right.
She writes note cards and
that, that's awesome. Yeah. Same exact thing.
It works.
Do you want to play something?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
You sure?
Thank you. I appreciate. No, John. I'm good.
All right.
No, I'm not. I'm
sitting here with a guitar player and I don't offer. That's rude.
No. I loved your guitar player.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much for having us on and putting the word out on Choices.
No.
It's been a magical journey.
It has.
And we're very excited about the whole process
and getting it out there to the world.
And we so appreciate you having us.
Oh, please. It's my pleasure. So what comes up next for Choices? What are we doing?
So we are once again in the workshopping stage where we actually – and I don't know if I should say this out loud, but we decided that the easiest way to give the producers who's going to be working with us to give them some material which they can edit was we're actually going to – create our own private film.
Wonderful.
Because we do believe that this is a show that needs to be seen. So our both of our production teams, the European and the USA production teams, have our libretto, and they also have audio tapes. But we feel that there's such a visual element to the show that we need to give them something visual. So rather than give them you know, something that was, you know, an iPhone in a movie in a theater and stuff like that. We decided, hey, let's film something in the way that we envision it, and then give it to them and say, do you like this or do you not like this? Let them chop it up.
How's that going? And I'm asking for a reason. Yep. I have a project. It's called the Lifted Project.
Yes.
And And so Lifted Project is, I'm getting Hudson Valley musicians together.
Yes.
We've picked it over
yeah, to
I
him.
Saw. Oh, cool. Yeah.
I'm very excited to that you're doing
it. Because
you
know I'm on board with anything I need to be.
Oh, good. Thank you. And part of what I want to do is make a documentary.
I have your guy.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you. Yeah. All right.
We have your guy.
Is it hard?
It is.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
We have 37 people in the show. Not just actors on stage, but musicians and stuff like that. And trying to get, you know, it's herding cats to get 37 people together at the same time.
Especially when you're not doing it full time.
Exactly.
How does that work?
We have people on the show who are just responsible for managing scheduling.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep.
And then
hi, Caitlin.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Uh-huh. We really had no choice.
So when you want to rehearse, are you still rehearsing? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you want to rehearse, how do you get?
That's the job of Caitlin O'Shea. Yes.
So she emails everybody and says rehearsals at this time and place.
How is next Thursday for you, and you? And then she gets a response, and then she puts it on a Google Calendar, and then based on that is how we have our rehearsals. We are filming at, and again, there's a private thing, but we rented out a theater this coming Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
And
we are actually, we're filming the show out of sequence, by the way. We're not running it in sequence.
Yeah.
Based on people's schedules and stuff like that. And then we're going to compile that into a finished, a looking project. We already have a finished sounding project, but we're going to finish looking project, and then we're going to send that on to our production teams, both here in the UK, and let them start evaluating and picking it apart. And you know, I take no offense to people saying, you know what, I think you can do this better, because I'm happy to make this the best possible thing that anyone's ever seen.
That's how you get good. You guys seem to have it all. You're channeling the creativity.
Yep.
Then you have the discipline.
Yep.
And then you take the ego off of it and then hand it off and let it evolve somewhere else.
Absolutely.
And let it get better.
I don't profess to having all the answers.
No, and I think also what he said, you know, none of us that work closely with him, if somebody says, you know, I don't like that costume, I go, okay, let's figure it out. You know, nobody takes it like, oh, what do you mean?
Right.
You know, we make it better. And I have to tell you, the costumes from start to now have really evolved. Like, I'm literally going into some of my old rocker buddies and saying,
that's hilarious.
What do you got in your closet?
Right.
Our main character wore a 1985 fringe leather jacket from my singer
in
his last production.
Wow.
I said to him, go in that closet and give me those jackets. Yeah. So, you know, we've made it better for the period of time. And you know, I don't think anybody takes any offense to any of it, which is great.
That's nice.
And here, John, this is an interesting thing that I just want to add to what Karen's saying, because Karen's spot on, is that be prepared with an argument. And what I mean by that is this. So our musical director, Mike Roseman, he's a genius, said to me about one particular song and a note that someone is singing. He goes, that, you know, they're singing the wrong note. That's dissonant. And then I said to him, well, you know, not for nothing, but, you know, I did, you know, I went to school for music and I've been writing. So I know it's dissonant. I mean,
it's dissonant on purpose.
It's dissonant on purpose.
Right.
So I said to him, well, why do you think it should be not dissonant? And so we had, I'm not making this up, John, we had like a, I think it was like a 15-minute discussion.
Beautiful.
about one note, okay,
right,
about why that note needed to be dissonant, okay? And if you are, we'd be honored for you to see our show. If you get to see it, you
love
need
to.
John, I'm telling you, every single note in there has a purpose. Mm, every single note.
That's crazy.
You know, and it's very... we have a new actress on board. Stephanie Thiessen is one of our leads, and she's new to the project. And every day she turns to me and she goes, wow, I get it.
Mm.
And I love that.
Yeah.
Because as she's going through the script and she understands her character full well, she's like, why does my character say this at this point? And you know what? As I said a minute ago, be prepared with an argument. And so I said, well, this is why. And then she goes, wow.
Yeah.
I get it. That makes sense. Everything, every single note has a purpose. And the reason that this show, again, is an opera is because, in my opinion, it makes the dialogue more poignant because every word has a note, associated with it, so it has a reason for being there.
Right.
So why does this person say, hi there, you know? Well, maybe it's because it feeds the melody line, maybe because – no, but I could have used other words or I could have done something else. So the reason even something as mundane as hi there is in the script is because it fits.
Right.
It's there for a reason.
Right.
And then some things are strangely uncovered. Like, for example – and I'm not, I don't want to give too much away unless you want me to, but
do what you want.
Throughout the very beginning of the show, this is set in the 1980s, as we talked about, and the 1980s was a very different time we have now, and a lot of things were more open. And you go to a concert, and at these concerts, it was there are a lot of sex going around, you know, at these shows, a lot of topless, a lot of nudity, a lot of things like that at these heavy metal concerts.
Yeah.
So there's.
I mean, I don't know, but
But so
there wasn't a lot of that at the James Taylor concert.
Not at the
I was going to.
But at the Rat concert and the Bon Jovi concert, there was.
Right.
Motley Crue. Anyhow, so there's a lot of talk at the beginning of the show about boobs. You know? And he's talking about boobs. I love boobs, boobs, boobs. And so the audience is going to perceive that as very crass and very, oh, that's very uncalled for, very inappropriate. You know, why is all this talk about boobs? Okay, I get it. They're trying to set the framework. They're trying to put this in a place in the 1980s, and it's crass and it's sexual. So I get it. That's why I said that's not the reason it's there. Later in the storyline, he marries this girl, and she dies of breast cancer.
Mm.
So all that talk of boobs isn't just foreshadowing. It's also he talks about how much he loves boobs, but then boobs is a thing that essentially ends his life.
Right.
And it destroys him.
Right.
So the reason that boobs are talked about so much in the beginning of the
show. Boobs have destroyed my life too.
But that's a whole different.
Completely different.
Hold everything.
Right.
Boobs have been a pleasure in my life. But that's all there. But anyhow, so like I said, everything has a purpose, but the purpose might not be readily apparent.
Mm.
It might take a while for the plot to develop.
Right.
And then you'll see, I get it now.
Right.
I get why there was all this talk about boobs and he's so obsessed with boobs. Boobs are the thing that ruins his life.
Right.
It destroys him, you know, and stuff like that. So there's many elements like that in the show. It's a pretty well thought out show, not just by the writer here you're talking to, not just by John Krupa here, but by time and time again of focus groups, and Karen was a very valuable member of those focus groups, and time and time again I listen to the audience, and time and time again I listen and I take all this constructive criticism, and it really helped develop something that I hope is the best show anyone's ever seen.
Well, that's something I hadn't thought about, but that's a really cool difference between what you're doing and a concert. is that in a concert you know you have your set list, you play it.
Yep.
People like certain songs, but you don't. You don't change much,
right?
Like once you're out, you're out,
right.
and you don't change much. But what's cool is your work seems to be a lot more curated.
Yeah,
changes were made,
more dynamic, improvements.
That's awesome, man.
But we're going to get to a point at some.
No,
point.
No, you're right. You're gonna have to nail it down.
And upon nailing it down, we do hope that everyone sees it and enjoys it, because again, there's so much work that went into it to make it the show that it is at that moment.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So I hope people will appreciate that, John. That they'll see the work that went into it. You know, and know that
they'll feel it.
Took a long, I hope so.
They'll feel it.
I say, yeah.
They better.
That's all right. You don't want to play us out?
No, you play.
Damn,
us.
Man.
All right. No, so you're the.
Where do I learn more about Choices, and how do I help the show? What do I do?
Thank you, John. So we do have a website that is Choices A Rock Opera, which is the name of the show, choicesarockopera.com. And that will tell you about upcoming events for the show, and that'll tell you where to get tickets to an upcoming show, and also it'll educate you about the show. There's a discussion of the storyline, the characters involved, and all that stuff. So please go to our website.
And go ahead.
And please like our Facebook, choicesarockopera.com.
And the name of the hair salon?
Locks That Rock Hair Design in Wappinger Falls, New York.
You guys are cool. Thank you for coming.
You're cool, John. You're cool.
Thank you again so much.
Thank you so much. And I love my t-shirt. And when we're done, I will take a picture of me in it. And then, Gramercy, you get to see your 60-year-old dad in a black t-shirt. I'm sorry in advance. And I'm John, and this was Home From Here.
Oh, thank you, guys. That was fun, man.
Thank you, John. No, thank you. You're amazing.
Oh,
thank
please,
you.
No.
Thank you.
I'm not,
really appreciate
no good without
it. We got
you
a picture, too?
Can yeah,
we get a
totally,
picture?
Please, yeah.
I think I put it in my pocket here.
You got yours.
Yeah, let me get mine. John, that was amazing.